The readings today are not the easiest for a preacher who wants to proclaim the love of God in today's world. They'd be excellent material for preachers who want to proclaim that God is to be feared. You think of that great story of the hellfire preacher who was painting a terrifying picture of eternal damnation with brimstone and fire and the gnashing of teeth. But an elderly member of the congregation said, "But I don't have any teeth." And the preacher thundered back, "Teeth will be provided." Paul is writing to a church in Corinth that appears to have had huge problems. They had some very confused theology. You think, for example, of how they were competitive about spiritual gifts, especially the glitzy ones like speaking in tongues. And Paul has to try to get them back into perspective with those famous words about faith, hope, and love in chapter 13 being headed as the best way of all. They also had very dubious patterns of behaviour. They also had people who thought they were better than the rest in their beliefs or their behaviour. And it seems to be at them that Paul addresses his strong words that we heard about God striking people down in the desert days of the Old Testament. I'd like to think we've moved on from that image of God as the touchy, impetuous God who zaps anyone who gets on the wrong side of him. But clearly Paul hadn't, or hadn't entirely, because the way he talks in this passage we hear today is by no means typical of him. I wonder if he's like many of us. We normally don't give in to the rather primitive ways of thinking we all have within us, but when our patience is tried enough, those darkest feelings emerge and we lash out. It's clear that he was getting pretty fed up with the Corinthians, and if the scholars are to believe, the two letters we have from Paul to them are not the only ones he wrote, and he found them a considerable trial. The clue may be in those words towards the end, "So if you think you are standing, watch out that you don't fall." The risk of thinking you are better than others is the most seductive of all positions to be in. It often goes hand in hand with being the kind of people who condemn others. They tut-tut at others because they're not like that. The others have fallen prey to some dreadful weakness, but the speaker is different. Paul knows we're all in the same boat, and that kind of spiritual one-upmanship or pride is not on. I'll return to that idea in a while. It also ties in with the stories we hear from Jesus in the Gospel. We can't be sure of the exact circumstances of the first incident he talks about. It appears to have been an act of political chicanery on the part of Pilate. He's had some people from Galilee killed whilst they were offering sacrifices in the temple. So this hot news about a dreadful act of savagery isn't so different from the stories we get with depressing regularity in the news today. Maybe when we're appalled by the way some people in power behave throughout the world, it helps us to get in touch with how appalling it must have seemed to those people talking to Jesus. But the implication is that the people Jesus is talking to have decided that these must be particularly bad Galileans who deserved it. Similarly, the people killed by a falling building in Jerusalem must have been especially sinful to have deserved such a fate. Jesus is talking to people whose religious mindset was that it was perfectly appropriate to connect individual tragedy with individual sin. At this point, he doesn't argue with that, although he does in other places. He simply challenges the assumptions that the victims of the temple massacre or the falling tower are any more wicked than anyone else. So he comes at it from their perspective, saying in effect, "If you reckon that getting slaughtered or crushed happens because you're bad, then watch out, because it could just as easily happen to you." "But really," you say, "I'm not like those dreadful people. I'm not in the same boat." That's precisely the point that both Jesus and Paul were making in different ways. We're not entitled to separate ourselves off from others like that. The stories of God zapping people in the Old Testament are largely about whole nations, within which there would be the whole gamut of people from really very good and holy to very impious and wicked. But they all get carted off to Babylon or whatever, good and bad alike. That's why there's always a communal and whole earth perspective to be taken into account. I may not be a violent person, but I'm part of a society which allows violence. I may not consciously exploit people who are less well off than me, but I'm part of a society that does. I have to share the guilt of the group. I have no personal indemnity which says I don't count towards that wrongdoing. When someone commits some dreadful atrocity, we have to face the fact that he or she is a fellow human being. Whatever it was they were trying to prove, it was because they felt hatred which provoked them to terrible wrongdoing. And that's part of the world's dysfunction, the world's sin. It's all the same as the point that John Donne made about never sending to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. We're never isolated from everyone else. The message from both Paul and Jesus is repent. Piece of religious jargon, of course. Let's just retranslate it literally. Think again. We need to have a different mindset to face in a different direction. That will always apply to us as individuals and as the human race. So it can be more than a little depressing, and you may not be feeling very good about my putting this in front of you, but it's realistic. It's the truth about the world as it is and us as we are. We all need reorientating in God's direction. But today's readings are not all gloomy news. Jesus goes on to talk about a fig tree which has failed to produce any fruit. The owner says to the gardener, it's a waste of space, pull it down. But the gardener asks for patience. Let's do all we can to encourage it to fruit. If that doesn't work, then so be it. The story of the Bible can be summed up in that story, of God giving us yet another chance to prove that we can do the right thing. And if we do, then there's even better news, as we hear in the reading from Isaiah. Let them return to the Lord that he may have mercy on them, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. So let me tell in closing about an amazing lady I heard at a meeting of churches together for families in London some years ago. Pat was a West Indian woman trying to do something to support young black people in Clapham. She lived on an estate where people were afraid to go out, where drugs were so common she said you never got away from the smell of cannabis, where prostitution was rife and where the teenage pregnancy rate was astronomical. She told of helping to deliver the baby of a 12-year-old in a Yardie family who refused to let her get any help. She spoke of the problem of absent fathers and children who came to her youth club so starved of paternal affection that they virtually mob the white dad who helps out. She talked of how they embarrassed her by their appalling behaviour on a Devon holiday she arranged. She had no doubt about how she summed up the situation. What is going on in these children's lives is wickedness. But instead of tut-tutting and standing apart, she was throwing herself into helping in whatever way she could, by bringing up the child of a drug-dependent mother herself, by running clubs and workshops for youngsters, by becoming a member of the primary care trust for the local health authority. But she wasn't setting herself apart from them. The time she got closest to tears was when she was telling us about refusing help at a supermarket when she was juggling shopping and a toddler, simply because she knew the woman offering to help was a prostitute. She wishes now she could find her again to apologise for treating her so badly. She sees herself as responsible not only for trying to help these youngsters, but also responsible for their plight, because she's part of the society which has allowed that situation to arise. Maybe that's why they respect her in the way they respect few others. She stands alongside them, listening to them, not apart from them and judging them. She wants them to repent, but if that is to happen, then so must she. When we read of terrible events that happen so frequently, gun and knife crimes in our own country, devastating abuse of people in many countries worldwide, we may well want our world to change, to think again. But if that is to happen, so must we.